Hi, it's Casey. Thank you so much for tuning in to Shine On today. I've got a little bit of news. Starting Sunday, the 1st of November, I'm going to begin Sundays at 11, which is a live Zoom call, which you are welcome to jump on. Each week, we'll probably have a special guest talking about things like we talk about when we get together here. Just it'll be on Zoom because I want to see some faces and connect and see how everybody's doing. So that's Sundays at 11, a free Zoom call. I don't want to say it's going to be every Sunday. It's going to be most Sundays. Like with everything else during this pandemic time, let's just give it a try and see what happens. Sundays at 11, a free Zoom call. Find out more at casey.co, K-A-C-E-Y.co. And the other thing that's new, you can also find at casey.co. I've started a series of Zoom recordings that you can find on the website with Nancy L. Johnston. Nancy L. Johnston may sound familiar. She wrote the book Disentangled. I've had her on this show two times, and I was preparing to have her back for a third time because she just makes so much sense to me. She is a licensed therapist in practice over 40 years, and she focuses on addiction and dysfunctional families, really. So just a wealth of information. And I wanted to connect with her. So I'm like, let's do a Zoom call. So we did one on Monday. And this is why I love Nancy L. Johnston. We fought over what to name the segment. She wants to call it the Casey and Nancy Show. I want to call it the Nancy and Casey Show. Because she's got the information, you know? She's just so sweet. And then I was thinking this morning, she's in Virginia, I'm in the Hudson Valley. We should call it Yankee and Dixie. Did anybody ever do that before? It seems like somebody should have. Anyway, Nancy Johnston, on the first episode that we recorded on Monday, I called the girlfriend questions from girlfriends, because things come up in conversation with girlfriends, and I say, you know what, I'm going to ask Nancy Johnston that question. So that's what the first episode is all about, and I think it's just about 20 minutes, and her daughter was like, Mom, why are you making a Zoom video? Why don't you just make a podcast? And she's like, honey, we've already made the podcast. We just want to do something different. So it was so nice to see this guest that I've never seen before and be face to face with her, or at least screen to screen. Okay. Today, my guest is Laura McCowan. Laura McCowan and I spoke, I think, pre-pandemic. But I was just going through some of the audio I've got saved filed in my computer, and I came across it, and I'm like, I haven't aired this yet. This is wonderful. Laura talks about a subject that we have spoken about before on this program, and that is finding your sobriety and living more authentically. Now, full disclosure, I haven't given up the red wine yet completely, but there is less of it in my life. But the most important thing is I feel okay about my alcohol consumption now. There have been times in the past where I didn't. I would be like, is this normal? Especially if you were an 80s baby, if you were out, you know, at the bars in the 80s, because that's all we did in the 80s, at least in my little corner of the world, you just went to the bars, you know, and I never did that well. I never did that well. Some people could do it well. I couldn't do it well. And speaking to Laura McCowan about her journey really helped me put some things into perspective. So her book is called We Are the Luckiest, and she's got a story to share.
So I have a pretty, I would say, typical story in that I grew up in a family where drinking was normal, in a culture where drinking was normal. I went to college at a drinking school. I went into advertising, which is a very booze-heavy industry, and it took its toll on me, all of that, you know, and I didn't, over the course of that time, didn't develop proper tools to deal with things like feelings and really any kind of discomfort. And I went through it. Really, my drinking really changed when I became a mom, which is something I hear from a lot of women. Our bodies change and our lives change so significantly, and mine definitely did. And I ended up getting separated from my husband and in 2012, and then 2013, I pretty much hit what should have been a rock bottom. It was how I opened the book, with this horrible night where I left my daughter in a hotel room. And that was the start of my sobriety journey, but I didn't stay sober for another year after that. And what I really wanted to focus on in my book was like what happened in that year and what happened after I got sober, because so many books are about, you know, the tragic drinking slide down into hell. And then, you know, there's a tiny amount of time spent on the sobriety part, but I think sobriety is so fascinating and interesting and complicated. And so I focus a lot on that.
Do you feel strong in your sobriety now?
Definitely. Yeah, it's been, you know, 5.5 years. I would say it took me a good year, almost 2 years, to feel really, really solid, you know, mm-hmm. to the point where I wasn't thinking about it anymore, about drinking or not drinking. And I was more solid. I mean, I had a lot of life to learn and a lot of messes to clean up. And so it hasn't been about the drinking in a long time. It's much more about emotional sobriety and
right.
telling the truth and... Yeah.
Did you do this with the help of a program, like a 12-step program?
I did. I went to AA in the beginning, and I still have a sponsor. I think the steps are beautiful, but a lot of my book focuses on, well, there's a big chapter about sort of my complicated relationship with AA, because I owe that program and the people in my life, but I also didn't love it all, and I incorporated a lot of other things, mm-hmm. too. So I feel like we're in such a great time because there are more options
right.
coming forward.
I just have to read this, okay? So humor me, put up with me. I just have to read this. Page 133.
Okay.
The pattern continued throughout my 20s as my relationships with men and drinking became braided with even more... No. I don't want to read that part.
Okay.
The alcohol was a way to connect... The bridge to intimacy, not only in romantic relationships, but especially in them. I believed it was the way in, a sort of magic trickery. I believe love happened only on some other island, a metaphorical place in my mind where all the right people lived. This is where you brought me to my knees. On that island, everyone was attractive and intelligent, and their bodies were whipped into shape. They married their soulmates, started families, got advanced degrees and big promotions, and they drank endlessly and effortlessly with no real consequences. My friends all lived on the island. So did the people I worked with. Anyone worth knowing lived there. It was a place I built on the false narrative that this was what it meant to be really alive. In my narrative, you had to live on the island to live the good life. It was what I saw growing up. It is what is marketed to us. It's the common belief in a culture of more, faster, now, better. Hang on. Even as my drinking clearly became destructive, I didn't see it as the problem. I saw myself as the problem. This is how it worked on the island. The drinking was a marker of a good life, of doing it right. Everyone else on the island seemed to be doing fine with it all. So clearly, I just needed to try harder. Laura.
Yeah.
Laura, do you know what you did there? I mean, you described what people have not even really thought or have brought into their hearts. There are so many people who feel this exact way. It's me. What's wrong with me? Other people can
totally.
Do it. I am so wrong. I can remember conversations with girlfriends calling me saying, what's wrong with me that, you know, I got drunk last night? What's wrong with me that I'm afraid to look out my car window and see where I parked or how I parked or if my car is even out there? What's wrong with me?
I know.
Yeah.
I know. It's so crazy. It's so crazy because we never think it's the alcohol and it's a drug.
And it's a drug. How did you tell us, give me more of that. How did you get in and take that crowbar and wedge that open to see that it wasn't you?
I mean, I had this sense very early on. I was filled with so much anger and almost rage when I went to start to get sober, because I was living this really you know, I was a vice president at a marketing agency. I had a big social life. I had, you know, lots of family and friends who wanted me around. I lived in Boston. I had all these things. And most people around me drank a lot too, right? I just had crossed some imaginary line where now I had a problem and I was supposed to go deal with it somewhere else and be quiet and not ruin the party for everyone else. And I just had this sense that we were all duped, like that this was crazy.
Yeah.
And that there was something so much bigger going on than just Laura has a problem. It was like, oh no, we have a major problem. This is nuts. Right.
This is nuts.
And so I followed that anger, and that's what really started me writing. And it wasn't like a victimization thing. It was more like a, how are we all so insane about this? Like, we just don't even see it. On the way home from my trip, I was flying home from California the other day, and I watched the movie The Big Short. I don't know if you've seen it, but it was about
the banks,
the housing crisis.
Right.
Yeah,
yes,
the banks.
Yes.
And it was sort of a similar feeling to that. Like, there were some people in that time who were looking at this and going, wait, does anyone else see what's going on
mm-hmm.
here?
Does anyone else see that this is insane?
Yeah, that we're supposed to, we glorify alcohol like it's this benign, beautiful thing, you know? And it's the most dangerous drug out there. If I read a study a couple weeks ago that said if alcohol came out today as a new drug, it would be banned. Like, there's just no way it would be accepted.
Right.
So it's just this really fascinating cultural phenomenon mixed with, you know, judgment about what addiction means as if it's this unique thing. It's like, no, we're all actually addicted. It's a very human condition. And alcohol is a powerful drug. It has the desired effect when you get addicted. You know, like, that's what's supposed to happen.
Right.
So you're not the problem. I wasn't the problem at all.
Right. And you said addiction is part of the human condition. Now, we're addicted mm-hmm. to all kinds of things in this life.
Yeah.
And I feel like people, certain groups of people, starting with, you know, you're younger than I am, wonderful younger people are waking up to this new reality. Like, my God, I've come from generation after generation after generation of people who were numb for most of their day or half of their day, or woke up slow because they were drinking the night before, or, you know, and culturally I'm Italian, so the wine on the table or the jug on the floor, it's a thing that we romanticize. So everybody, and I think every culture and every family has its own, if they drink, they have their own special thing, you know, grandpa's.
Yeah, that's right.
Grandpa's glass, you know, his drinking glass or his whatever.
Right.
Yeah. So we're all waking up. Many people are waking up to the fact that we can't live our best lives if we're bombed. Right?
We can't. Well, we can't even live our best lives if we're, like, just partially, you know, not there.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be that you're blacking out. It can be the couple of glasses of wine like that. That extra 10% or 20% is where all your magic really is. You know, it's like I said in the book, it's like the difference between living and just existing.
Right.
That 10 or 20%. So, yeah, no, it's kind of this foregone conclusion that people, that adults are going to drink, you know, there. We don't think much of it. But you asked how I, you know, peeled that back, and it was just, I just followed my anger, and I started writing, and writing, like, really gave me I figured out what was going on, mm-hmm. not just with me, but overall.
Did you lose friends?
No, not really. I definitely, all my relationships changed, all of them, you know, for the better in a lot of cases, but some just fell away. I wouldn't say I lost anybody, because that makes it sound like like there was something to lose. Like, the relationships that were based on alcohol just fell away.
Right.
But my real friends and the people, you know, my relationships are so much better now. My circle is smaller, but definitely deeper.
Right. How's your daughter?
She's wonderful. She just turned 11. Mm-hmm. So she's now seen me for more years sober than not, which
right.
is pretty cool.
And how is your relationship with your daughter's father?
It's good. You know, we co-parent really well. We've been divorced for quite a long time now, and we've done well. I mean, had I not gotten sober, our relationship would be a disaster.
Right.
You know, I was not just a horrible partner, but I just wasn't a great person in any relationship. I couldn't even trust myself. So our relationship is good. It really is.
How scary was it to make this leap into sobriety, or was it scary at all?
Oh, it was very scary. I mean, I made a very gradual leap, too. You know, it was like I tried for over a year before I actually got sober. And I would say a lot of that trepidation in that time was fear. I just didn't know what sobriety would be like. And it felt like I was losing everything. And I didn't know that it would be better or even comparable to, you know, there was a lot of grief and other things in there, but I think fear of the unknown is huge. We just, even if something is deeply painful to us, a relationship or a habit or whatever, we stay with it because it's what we know. And so not knowing what it was going to be like and doing it anyway took a lot of faith.
Yeah. How is life better?
Oh, I mean, how is it not? It's like, what I always wanted was to be, like, to have this direct experience of life, you know, to really, I thought I was really living and, you know, feeling all these big things and having these great experiences, and I really wasn't. I was having a few of the same experiences over and over and over again, and very few emotions. And when I got sober, it was like, eventually it was like the lights turned on. It was like, oh, this is what joy actually feels like. And also the really difficult thing. So my relationships are 1,000,000% better. My relationship with my daughter is wonderful. I'm able to actually make things happen in my life, you know, to follow through. And my work, I left my career in marketing to do what I do now, which is writing, and I teach courses that I developed on sobriety and personal development. I work for myself, which is a total dream for me. I'm not afraid of myself anymore, which is huge. You know, I have actual sort of peace in my heart, even when things are really difficult. I mean, look, it's not that life is easier. It is easier in some ways, but it's not that life is easy. There's a lot of, life is still life.
Right.
But I'm not shrouded in anxiety and crushing fear and hangovers and just really the pain of knowing that I was wasting all my potential. I mean, that was the deepest pain of all.
Right. Wasting your potential. Yeah. Yeah. I got it. All right, just take a minute and talk to the women and the men who've got that pit in their stomach right now. Like, I can't stop. I can't stop drinking.
Mm. Yeah. Well, this is what I did. I did not think about, first of all, if you have been drinking, you know, consistently for a while, you shouldn't just stop. And that, you know, that I always say that because not many people realize that just stopping drinking can be fatal. It's so you should get help with that. And but what I want to say is, of course you can stop. Of course you can. Like, I would ask them what my yoga teacher asked someone years and years ago, which when he said, the student said, I don't think I can stop drinking. And my yoga teacher said, of course you can. Are you drinking right now? And he said, no. He said, okay, how about now? He said, no. And now? And he said, no. So, of course, you can stop drinking.
Yeah.
and you don't have to do it forever. You can do it just for the next hour and then the next hour, and that can take you all the way until you don't have to think about it like that anymore.
Right. And then it's on us, it's our responsibility to learn how to celebrate and feel happiness without popping a cork.
Yeah, you have to learn how to do everything over again, but life teaches you. It's funny because we were born with joy. We were born playful, and we knew how to have fun. And it's like we forgot. That got stolen somewhere along the line by alcohol or drugs or whatever, thinking that that was what it meant to celebrate. But we know how. This is like more of a return, you know, to our original state. We know that's in us already. Right, so it's just a relearning.
It's a return. She's back. Laura McCowan, we are the luckiest, the surprising magic of a sober life. What does your family, your parents, your aunts and uncles, what do they have to say about all this?
Oh, I mean, most of my family is just very happy and relieved that things went the way that they did. You know, it could have been otherwise. So the people close to me and my family, they're all just very happy that this is the way it went. Happy for me, happy for my daughter, and
yeah,
I'm grateful, you know.
Grateful. All right, I'm sending you back to your purposeful, sober life, and where can people who need your help find you?
Everything is on my website. It's my name, lauramccowan.com, and I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. Those are the places to find me.
All right. I like you very much, but we can't be friends because you probably like the Red Sox.
Yes, I do. Sorry.
Okay, I'm done with you. It's over between us.
Thank you for having me on.
Thank you, Laura. Have a great day.
You too. Bye.
Okay, that's Laura McCowan, and I enjoyed her very much, as you can tell. And I went and looked it up. It was February. I recorded that in February. And I can hear the difference in my voice. I can hear what I felt like before the pandemic. I don't know if you can hear that, but I can hear that. I had that, you know, not a care in the world kind of feeling. As we all did in February, right? If we were lucky. We Are the Luckiest. That's Laura McCowan's book. And as she was talking, I made notes on a piece of paper towel. I had no paper. I guess not. But we got paper towels here next to all the cleaning supplies for cleaning the board in the studio. So here I wrote on my paper towel, feeling, allowing herself to feel her feelings and feel discomfort. She says, I saw myself as the problem. It's the alcohol. It's a drug. Who handles drugs well? I don't know. Maybe there's some professionals, but... the magical island. Oh, the magical island where people drink without consequences. Rage at losing her social life. And the sense that we were all duped. Also, as I turned my piece of paper towel over, if alcohol came out today, it would never be approved. Addiction is part of the human condition. And that she thought she was living a big life, but it was really a big lie. She was just having similar experiences over and over again. And also about refinding joy, how we're born with joy. Laura McCowan, We Are the Luckiest. That's her book, and she's all over social media. Okay, so thank you for tuning in. Don't forget, we have new things. We've got Sundays at 11. That's a Zoom call. Everybody can jump on. Yes, everybody. If you go to kacey.co, kacey.co, there's a Zoom link there. That's the part I hope I did right. I hope I did that right. But if I didn't do it right, I'll do it right Sunday morning at 11 and put it on the website as quick as I can. But I'm pretty sure you can just find the link and put that in your browser. And the other thing is, if you have a few minutes while you're at the... while you're at kacey.co, you can check out the first of the Zoom videos I did with Nancy Johnston, talking about girlfriends' questions. And I hope you weren't horrified about the girlfriend questions or the girlfriend comments I brought up here. But yeah, the 80s, not pretty. We thought we were having fun. We were dumb. Okay, it is time for our thought for the day, and I went searching for one, and then I remembered, why not use the prayer that is posted in a couple of places in the house that is often used at 12-step meetings? And that is the Serenity Prayer. I'm sure I've told you before, my husband is 22 years sober, and the reason I married him is because he could speak 12-step language, which is so important to me. I mean, if you've never read the 12 steps before, maybe you want to do that today, because it's a powerful process for whatever you can throw up your hands and say, I am powerless over this. Anyway, check that out. So, thank you for listening. See you soon. And our thought for the day, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Shine on.